Chapter 23. Perspicacious. Perspicacious. P-E-R-S-P-I-C-A-C-I-O-U-S. Having a ready insight into and understanding of things. Discerning or shrewd. Early 17th century English. From Latin, perspicace. Perspicac. Seeing clearly. Plus acious. Things have escalated to the point that Hiruzen now cringes reflexively every time Kakashi sends him a report. This time is no different, even if the report happens to come with one of Itachi's crows instead of one of Kakashi's Ninken. As soon as the bird has deposited its message and swooped back out the window, Hiruzen sits back in his chair, eyeing the scroll warily. Across the office, at a slightly battered additional desk dragged in for his use, the Kazekage looks up. "Something wrong?" he asks suspiciously. "More than likely, yes." Hiruzen sighs, raising a hand to rub at the forming headache even as he reaches for the message. Deciding it's best to get things over with, he opens it quickly and unrolls it, studying the words. "Ah, yes. That's a familiar headache. He's taken to fondly referring to it as Kurama." Kakashi's pursuit team encountered two more Jinchuriki, he tells Rasa grimly. "Apparently loyal to Kurama's cause, as they were willing to start a fight in order to keep the team from following him." Rasa blows out a short, sharp breath and leans back in his chair, shoving a stack of paperwork aside and crossing his arms over his chest. "Two?" he asks. "Humph. What do you want to bet your team just found those Jinchuriki Iwa's been unforthcoming about?" "Unlike my former student," Hiruzen says dryly, "I'm not in the habit of taking sucker bets. I believe you're right. Perhaps now Iwa will begin to take us more seriously. Onoki is a hard-headed fool, but even he can be made to see reason eventually." "It's all the rocks they bounce their skulls off during training." The Kazekage sounds reluctantly amused. "I've never met more stubborn shinobi than the ones from Iwa."
"You've never come across an Uzumaki,"
Hiruzen almost counters, but stops himself at the last moment. Given the circumstances, it's probably not the most tactful thing he could say.
"That makes four Jinchuriki, at least," Rasa says, thoughtfully, making Hiruzen glance up at him again. The Kazekage has his chair tipped back, his eyes on the wall but focused beyond it. "Five, if Uzumaki really is one. Six, if Taki's Jinchuriki isn't skulking in the woods somewhere, like they seem to think she is. And if he's even managed to convince the older ones to side with him, I'd expect he's already converted Gaara and the other boy."
Hiruzen wonders about that. It's only a suspicion, but he finds it likely that Iwa's two Jinchuriki are missing Nen, or the next best thing. He hasn't heard even vague mention of them in years, which is rather telling. Iwa isn't shy about otherwise flaunting its strength, and they were noticeably absent in the Third Shinobi War. Perhaps Onoki kept them back because Kushina rarely made an appearance on the battlefield. Hiruzen hadn't wanted to provoke Iwa into mobilizing against her personally, but Onoki isn't a subtle man. If he'd had the power, he likely would have used it. So it stands to reason that this Han and Orochi had already made themselves absent back then.
Those who have suffered longest are often the easiest converts, he reminds Rasa, re-rolling Kakashi's scroll. Especially if Kurama is offering them something they've wanted for a long time. With a suddenness that's almost jerky, especially compared to his usual forthright grace, Rasa shoves to his feet, sending his chair sliding back to crash into the wall. He doesn't even glance back as he stalks up to the window, where he pauses, bracing one hand on the glass as he looks out over Konoha's streets. And just what is it he's offered them, Hiruzen? He demands. What could he have offered that would have made 5 Jinchuriki turn their backs on the world that created them, that revered them?
Revered? I would rather say feared, Hiruzen says evenly, leaning back in his seat and reaching for his pipe to give his hand something to do.
Rasa, I know very well the state of Suna's relationship with its Jinchuriki. Your relationship with your son, he doesn't say, because that's also a little too tactless to utter right now. Do you really imagine that any other village is different? Perhaps it's less overt elsewhere, but Jinchuriki are feared for their capabilities, for the fact that there are the closest things to gods this world has encountered trapped inside them. Only B is different that I've seen, and he's worked his entire life to be seen as non-threatening. Because he's looking for it, he can see the flicker of grief that crosses Rasa's face, deep and painful, and instantly shut away. For all his many faults, Rasa loved his wife, loves his village, and Hiruzen is absolutely certain that Rasa loves his youngest son as well. But he's a Kage before he's a father, something Hiruzen knows all too well. And the Ichibi seal is loose, cracking. It wasn't meant to be this way, Hiruzen is sure, but it is. Gaara is a monster instead of a weapon, and as Kaze Kage, Rasa can do little more than work to contain and control him, even if containing him means ending his life. Rasa is paying for his choices, for his mistakes. A very small part of Hiruzen wonders if Minato would have faced the same choices, had he used a weaker seal and survived his battle with the Kyuubi.
Is that all this is? Rasa asks, low and intent. Really? You think Uzumaki has done all of this because he's a kind person? Because he doesn't want to see the other Jinchuriki suffering? I know you can be a fool, Hiruzen, but don't be a naive one. There has to be some other motivation.
He's correct, and Hiruzen inclines his head, allowing for the point. Yes, but I've yet to see any concrete evidence of it. We haven't even been able to predict his path.
Rasa hums low in his throat, not looking away from the blue horizon. Does he have ties, bonds? Do you know anything about his past?
It takes several moments of shuffling through piles on his desk, but Hiruzen finally finds the scroll with Kakashi's first report, right after the discovery of the daimyo's daughter. With it is another report, this one from a team Hiruzen sent to track Kurama's movements before he reached Konoha. Because he knows every word of both, he passes them over to Rasa without hesitation. This isn't a time or situation where any of them can afford to keep secrets.
He came from the north, Hiruzen says, sitting back again to light his pipe. A squad tracked his movements to a town near the border, where he stayed for the night. The innkeeper was unforthcoming, but one of her regular patrons recognized his description. Before that, there's no record of him anywhere that we've been able to find. Then again, I can't really say I expected anything less.
Rasa's eyes flicker up from the scrolls for a moment, and he raises one brow slightly.
You think?
He starts, and then stops, frowning in consternation. Sarutobi can read the rest of that question in his face. It's not exactly a leap of logic, honestly, given what they know. that he's been in Uzushio since it fell, it's a distinct possibility.
But Uzushio didn't have a Jinchuriki,
Rasa counters, shifting that frown to Hiruzen. If they had, they wouldn't have been wiped out by Kiri. Hiruzen hums and lets himself play devil's advocate, just for the twitch it puts in Rasa's expression. Kiri has a respectable population and a decent force. They're also several times the size Uzushio was. With a scoff, Rasa drops the reports on the desk and crosses his arms over his chest. Kiri also has an overabundance of bloodthirsty bastards who are more interested in killing each other than taking their warmongering to another country. If Uzushio had been hit by anything but a surprise attack, by anyone but the Sandaime Mizukage and the Seven Swordsmen, they'd have sent Kiri running. As it is, there was no Jinchuriki there. There was no saving Uzushio. Your logic is flawed. Is it? Hiruzen asks mildly.
These are our suppositions. Uzumaki Kurama is Uzumaki Kushina's younger half-brother by the same father. Literally bred to be a Jinchuriki, likely by Kumo. One of nine brothers, if his story is to be believed. I would assume he grew up hearing of his home, the wonders of Uzushio, and the first chance he got to escape, he ran there. Early enough that he encountered his half-sister, but never told her of his identity or the beast he carried within him. Kushina left to take on the Kyubi, and barely a month later Uzushio fell. Perhaps Kurama was not in the village. Perhaps he was. Either way, a young boy was left in the shattered remains of the only home he'd ever known. His family dead or out of reach. All he had was his home. Broken as it was, and the bijou inside of him.
There's a long minute of silence. Rasa is staring at him, thoughts flickering quickly across his face, though he doesn't voice them.
Hiruzen sighs softly, taking a drag on his pipe.
Kurama is grieving, even now, he says. It was as plain as day when I met him. If the grief is still so fresh 25 years after Uzushio's fall, he has to have kept its memory close to him somehow. All of Uzushio's remaining shinobi scattered afterwards. What few of them were left. But what if Kurama didn't?
That's a long time to live alone,
Rasa agrees after another moment, voice faintly rough.
Not alone.
Hiruzen gives him a humorless smile.
That's the point, isn't it? 25 years listening to the bijou in his head, believing that, had he had a little more power, a little more control, he could have saved his home. Well, this is only speculation, of course.
Speculation that makes an unfortunate amount of sense. Rasa leans against the edge of the desk, weariness briefly overcoming propriety, and rubs a hand over his eyes. Neither of them have gotten more than a few hours of sleep in the past few days, and the hours are starting to drag like lead weights.
He's saving them, at least in his own mind.
He went for the youngest first, from what we can tell, Hiruzen agrees. Forgive the implication, but any other child treated the same way as Gaara and Naruto would be considered the worst kind of abuse. So he took them. It's likely he has a plan as to what he'll do with them when he's collected all eight of the others. He's too smart not to, but we've no way of knowing what it is.
Revenge, Rasa suggests, mouth pulling into an unhappy line. For the oppression, or however he wants to phrase it.
Maybe. Kurama certainly seemed prone to anger, but if his temper is anything like Kushina's, it's the type of anger that fades quickly. Though, really, at this point, Hiruzen will believe practically anything where Kurama is concerned. That one man, even a Jinchuriki, could cause so very many problems is improbable. Before he can say as much, though, there's a sharp, urgent rap,
not on the door of the office, but on the window, and both Kage turn quickly. Hiruzen blinks in surprise, pulling his pipe away from his mouth at the sight of Hagane Kotetsu, clinging to the sill, looking serious. The boy is a jokester, lighthearted and prone to laughter, but he takes authority seriously. For him to skip the main door in favor of the window, something must have happened. Kotetsu? Hiruzen asks, throwing open the window and allowing the chunin to eel his way through the narrow gap. I thought you were on gate duty this morning. The boy, who frequently runs messages for him, belatedly bows to both men and then blurts, "The Daikage is at the gate, sir." Hiruzen stares at him for a long moment, then closes his eyes and pinches the bridge of his nose. "Of course he is," he mutters, and then raises his voice again. "With Shinobi?" "A pair of bodyguards and his brother," Kotetsu reports. It only takes a second to calculate distances and times involved. There's little chance that A was able to get his message before he departed, unless he recently learned the Flying Thunder God technique, and Hiruzen hopes for all their sake that he hasn't. Therefore, this can't be about the warning Hiruzen sent about Kurama, but he can't think of a single other thing that would motivate A to come so deep into enemy territory with his brother, Kumo's most well-known Jinchuriki. "More things wrong, undoubtedly." Rasa's voice is wry. Hiruzen snorts. Maybe he and the Kazekage are only reluctant allies, bound by treaties and defeats and circumstances. But when he glances at the auburn-haired man, their eyes meet in a moment of perfect shared understanding. "Who did you leave at the gate, then?" he asks Kotetsu, tapping out his pipe with only a flicker of regret. "I assume you didn't simply abandon your post." "Of course not, Hokage-sama!" Kotetsu looks offended by the very idea. "Genma was waiting for his team anyway, so he said he'd keep an eye on things." Hiruzen bolts to his feet fast enough that his bones protest, and he accidentally knocks his chair over. "You left Genma?" he echoes disbelievingly. Hurrying around the side of the desk, he doesn't bother berating Kotetsu, but heads for the door with more haste than he's used since he first heard that Kakashi and Kurama were fighting over Naruto. A moment later, Rasa appears on his left, keeping pace with him. "This Genma's a hothead?" he asks with faint amusement. "It would be easier for everyone if he were. Instead, Genma is the type of cool-headed that lets him think every action through, work out all the angles, and then still do things that are reckless enough to give Hiruzen even more gray hairs. Hiruzen blames Kushina's influence. Genma might have been Minato's bodyguard, but the boy practically worshipped Kushina as his patron goddess." "No," he answers as they hit the street, and just manages to catch a flash of his current bodyguard's worried expression, despite how he's trying to stay unseen. "Raido knows better than anyone why Genma shouldn't be left alone around A. I'm afraid Kumonin were responsible for the deaths of his mother and older sister, the last of his family. I don't doubt that A can survive almost anything, but Genma is determined when he needs to be." Rasa winces, clearly familiar with such grudges. Understandable, given the state of Kumo's relations with Suna. Then again, Kumo doesn't really have peaceable relations with any of the other villages. A is a paranoid bastard at the best of times. Thankfully, the gate is just around the next corner, and Hiruzen slows to a brisk walk, tugging his robes back into place. There's no sound of mass destruction from up ahead, though that means little. Genma is one of Anbu's best assassins for a reason, and it's not because he's flashy. Still, Hiruzen takes it as a good sign and rounds the corner with the majority of his composure intact. It's not quite as bad as he was expecting. Genma is lounging back against the side of the gatehouse, Senbon tucked between his teeth, expression lazy and amused. A is eyeing him suspiciously from just outside the gate, and the Raikage's bodyguards are visibly tense. Hiruzen, who knows Genma well, can see the edge of threat in his posture. The way his fingers are lingering just a bit too close to the Senbon, dipped in his trademark and very nasty poison. The spark of fury well hidden in hazel eyes. Still, he hasn't made a move yet, and that's a decent start. Kotetsu, he says quietly, and the boy who followed them from his office obediently slips up beside him. Go find Guy. Tell him Genma needs him. Yes, Hokage-sama, Kotetsu says quickly, then bows and disappears in a whirl of leaves. Hiruzen allows a bit of tension to bleed from his shoulders. Choza might have trained a team of absolute maniacs, but Guy, Ebisu, and Genma are admirably close. And Genma and Guy have a stronger bond than many shinobi. If anyone can help the Tokujo calm down, it's Konoha's green beast. Well, this is unexpected, he says, allowing his voice to carry. Five sets of eyes immediately snap to him, and Hiruzen doesn't allow himself to glare at the flicker of disappointment that crosses Genma's face. A is the priority right now. Though, Hiruzen will definitely be having a talk with his erstwhile bodyguard later. A, to what does Konoha owe the pleasure of your presence? A's eyes narrow, and he studies Hiruzen for a moment before shifting his gaze to Rasa. It was both of you that did this? He asks, not quite hostile enough to make it a threat, but more than enough to have Genma tugging the senbon from his mouth and straightening abruptly. The two kunoichi accompanying A shift forward automatically, hands reaching for their weapons, and Uraido slides out of the shadows to stand a pace behind Hiruzen, one hand on the hilt of his poisoned sword. That's quite enough of that, Hiruzen decides with a faint sigh. Genma, he says, gentle but firm, I thought your team had left already. Genma doesn't take his eyes off the kumonin, though he does step away and roll his shoulders, sliding back into the deceptively lazy slouch he favors when in front of a threat. Sorry, Hokage-sama, he answers. One of Hana's dogs had a limp, so she wanted to check him over before we left. I said it was fine. Hohetto took our new friend from Suna to get some extra medical supplies, since she's an excellent medinin. Genma also has the ability to say something in such a way that it could either be an insult or completely serious. And the listener is left wondering. Catching how Rasa is eyeing the Tokujo, Hiruzen allows himself a brief, hard look at the assassin, who gives him a cheerfully innocent smile in return, and then says, All right, you're assigned to the northeast, yes? When Genma nods, he continues, Change course and head for Uzushio Gakure. Scour the ruins for any signs of Kurama living there, and check with any inhabitants to see if he was there previously or recently returned. I'll be sending the same orders to Kakashi's squad. Genma doesn't ask questions, just inclines his head and then turns at the sound of Guy calling his name. Hiruzen waves him away before he can ask to be dismissed, and the Tokujo bows, steps back, and gives A one last long, cool glance before he heads for his friend. Hiruzen absolutely hates his job some days. Most days. Both of us, indeed, he answers A's earlier statement with a polite smile. I take it this isn't a friendly visit, A? A glares at him, folding his brawny arms over his chest in a way that would be a threat to anyone not considered the third god of shinobi. Hiruzen is faintly amused. He's old, yes, but if this upstart boy half his age thinks to intimidate him, he'll have to do far more than loom a little. It makes him wish he'd grabbed his pipe, because it's hard to look less concerned than he does when he's absently smoking it, and little gets his point across better. After a moment of attempting to stare him down, A finally huffs and says sharply,
We already know you hold the Kyubi Jinchuriki, but what other Jinchuriki are you hiding, Sarutobi? One brow rising, Hiruzen looks up at the big man, then glances at Rasa. The Kazekage looks back, equally startled, then inclines his head, ceding control of the conversation to him. Hiruzen stifles another sigh and answers, "None, but may I ask what gave you the impression that we were?" A gives him a distinctly dirty look and jerks a thumb at his brother, who looks bored and disinterested in the posturing. B's been talking with a Hachibi, and an unfamiliar Bijou recently showed up in the mind space they all share. The Hachibi hasn't caught a glimpse of him yet, but he did say the host's chakra is definitely Uzumaki, and you've got the only ones I know of. Since your new Jinchuriki just killed two of our best jonin and nabbed a little girl, I thought I'd give you the chance to hand her over before this devolves into a fourth war. Very, very alarmed now, Hiruzen takes a step back. Another? He demands, and feels Rasa catch his elbow when the ground wavers beneath his feet. Maybe his doctor wasn't exaggerating when she warned him about straining his heart. You're certain there's a tenth Bijou? Calculation flickers rapidly across A's face, then slides into grimness. It's not one of yours, he concludes, arms falling from his chest to brace on the wide belt he wears. He doesn't look happy with the conclusion. We thought he was one of yours, Rasa says, bitterly amused. He certainly looked like a Kumonin when he was kidnapping my son from the center of Suna. And Uzumaki Kushina's son from our streets, Hiruzen adds, lightly brushing off Rasa's hand. He's grateful to the newfound solidarity between their villages, but he's hardly a helpless old man, regardless of shocks rendered. We've come to believe there's a pattern. A clearly doesn't need it spelled out for him. Jinchuriki, he says grimly. He's stealing Jinchuriki, and you thought it was one of my shinobi? Perhaps not directly affiliated, Hiruzen allows, though his thoughts are still mostly occupied with the idea that there aren't 9-tailed beasts, but 10. This has the potential to be very bad indeed. Though we mostly have speculations regarding his past at this point. Something your father did, maybe? Uzumaki Kurama looks to at least share blood with a Kumonin somewhere in his past. With a deep frown, A looks over at B, then blows out a heavy breath. Maybe, he allows grudgingly. My father was a good man and a strong Kage. That doesn't mean he didn't keep secrets. Kurama would be a hell of a secret to keep, Hiruzen thinks wryly. Though perhaps less of one if he fled to Uzushio as a child. Or maybe it wasn't the Raikage's project at all. If Orochimaru and Danzo's actions have taught Hiruzen anything, it's that a Kage can never entirely control their village, no matter how they wish to. We should speak somewhere more private, Rasa says quietly, tilting his head back in the direction of the administration building. Hiruzen would be annoyed with the presumption, but the thought of Danzo reminds him that not all the ears potentially nearby are guaranteed to be loyal. Good idea, he agrees and inclines his head to A. Welcome to Konoha, A. A flicker of reluctant amusement rises in A's eyes before it's tamped down, and he snorts as he steps through the gates. This place is kinda neat, B says, following close behind, and Hiruzen is all too familiar with that kind of I dare you to stop me cheer. He braces himself for anything. Too bad the whole village smells like urk. Shut up, A hisses at his brother, currently in a headlock as if he isn't one of the most powerful shinobi alive. As if both of them aren't. I told you to stop rapping. One more word and it's the iron claw for you. Why? Hiruzen wonders, a little despondently. Why must the best shinobi always have such
colorful personalities. At least Hiruzen's fondness for tastefully erotic literature is both subtle and easily hidden. Unfortunately, he's come to see that he's a definite minority where his quirks are concerned. Yukito isn't entirely certain what she was expecting when Matatabi told her to find a wayward bijou trapped in human form. More inhumanity, perhaps. Anger, fury, destruction. A creature of rage and fire and inhuman hunger, tearing his way across the elemental countries without allowing anything to get in his way. What she'd found instead is a man, tired and tense, with lines around his eyes that are from equal parts good humor and weariness. His hair is like a beacon, brilliantly red, and his eyes are three shades darker, warm like coals in the heart of a fire on a cold night. Between his ragged, unpatched clothing and his bare feet, he looks like the deceptively wise beggar from a story, giving lessons to the emperor, rather than a construct of chakra given life and intelligence. Up, up, he urges, as Yukito watches, crouching down next to one of the other small bodies she missed last night. Come on, Kit, it's morning, and we've got a long day ahead of us. If you don't get up now, I'm going to chuck you in the pond. There's a sleepy grumble, a wordless protest, but the little blonde boy sits up, rubbing at his eyes. Kurama chuckles softly, ruffling his hair like Yukito has seen parents do to their children before, and drops a handful of granola bars into his lap. Then he moves on to the redhead, curled up next to the blonde, whose eyes are already open, even if he doesn't look entirely happy about it. And one dark hand combs gently through spiky crimson hair. All right, Gaara? Kurama asks, and gets a nod as the boy sits up. More granola bars change hands, and Gaara immediately tears one open, nibbling at it tiredly. He's gentle, Yuito thinks, pulling his haori a little more tightly around herself and staying silent. That's something else she hadn't expected at all. Gentle in a way she's never really encountered before. Her teachers are brutal, and their methods are harsh. Kumo is a little friendlier to its Jinchuriki than any other country, she knows, but that doesn't mean it's nice living there. Yukito has been training since she was 2 years old, and she's never felt human. B is kind, and he's fond of her, but he's also permanently busy, either shadowing the Raikage or training on his own. And A? He believes that Jinchuriki have no right to anything, not even their own decisions. They're tools for the good of the village, first and foremost. Yukito has been raised to believe that, to know it and hold it dear, to use it to grow stronger, but Matatabi is a constant presence inside of her, with a will of her own, and sometimes Yukito can't help but look at her and think, but this isn't what I want. Won't I ever get a choice? Morning already, Kurama-ni? The last body, shedding its blankets as it sits up, to reveal a girl only a little younger than Yukito, with pretty leaf-green hair and eyes like the sunset before a storm. Those eyes slip past Kurama, instantly alighting on Yukito, and her entire face lights up. Oh, are you another Jinchuriki? That gets her even more attention, the two little boys jerking out of their sleep hazes to blink at her in surprise. And Yukito swallows down her nervousness, the faint flicker of, what if they don't like me? What if I can't be one of them even here? Then squares her shoulders and nods. I'm Ni Yukito, and my bijou is Matatabi, the Nibi. Pleased to meet you.
I'm Uzumaki Naruto. The blonde boy answers enthusiastically, and I've got the Kyuubi in my head.
Fu, formerly of Takigakure, the girl offers with a smile. My bijou is Chome, the Nanabi. I'm glad you're here. It's so cool to meet the others.
The red-headed boy glances between his two friends, aquamarine eyes wide and faintly cautious, and then looks at Kurama. When Kurama just rolls his eyes and scuffs a hand through his hair again, the boy flushes, ducks his head, and says quietly, I'm Gara no Sabaku, with Shukaku, the Ichibi.
Now that we all know everyone's got a name, let me borrow your hairbrush for a second, Fu, Kurama says, rising from his crouch. That tone is probably meant to sound annoyed, but there's amusement in his eyes and warmth on his face. Yukito can't bring herself to even begin to feel offended.
Are you actually going to brush your hair?
Fu says interestedly.
I can help.
It's not for me, brat, Kurama returns, exasperated. He takes the brush she passes him, then sits down in front of the dying fire and beckons Yukito closer. Come here, kitten. Let's see what we can do to get you looking less like a murder scene. For a moment, Yukito thinks about protesting that she's more than capable of doing it herself, that she's always brushed her hair before and never had anyone help her, but she's never had anyone offer to help, and surely it will be okay to accept that sort of kindness, just this once. Silently, she slides over, settling in front of Kurama's crossed legs and turning her back to him. There's a pause, and then fingers slip through her hair, pulling it back over her shoulders. The feeling of it hanging free is unfamiliar. As long as she can remember, Yukito has kept it tied back, out of her way. That's simply how a shinobi wears it, and she's never once been anything but a shinobi. Out of the corner of her eye, Yukito can see clever fingers tipped with sharp claws, picking determinedly at a knot, and she doesn't know how to feel about that. The simplest way to deal with all the mud and blood matted into her hair would be to cut it off, or just yank the brush through. That's what she would do, what she'd been planning on in a vague way, when she could push down the fear and desperation enough to focus on silly, inconsequential things like hair. But Kurama is taking the time to work each mat apart, to free each strand before he gently slides the brush through it. And that's also unfamiliar. Alarmingly so. Matatabi? She asks. Because that's who she always asks, and has ever since they first came to an understanding. Deep within her mind, there's a soft chuckle, a warm touch like the brush of fur against her cheek. Don't let the grumpiness fool you. Kurama has a soft heart under all the bluster. He used to hide it better, but I think he stopped trying now. Yukito is glad. She pulls the haori a little more closely around her, not for the warmth so much as the scent of fire and sky-clean wind caught in the fabric, and closes her eyes against the gentle tug of the brush through her long hair. Do you want me to leave it loose, kitten? Kurama asks, and Matatabi is the only one who's ever called her that, but she doesn't mind it, coming from this man. I can braid it if you want. I think I remember how to do that, at least. For a moment, Yukito debates letting it fall free, but she's still a shinobi, even if she's currently abandoned her village. She could have run to Kumo, after all. It was far closer to the Valley of Clouds and Lightning than Kurama was, but Matatabi had spoken of others like her, children like her, and she hadn't been able to resist. A poor choice, probably, and likely the wrong one, her teachers would say. Her teachers are dead, though, slaughtered without hesitation or mercy when the shinobi with the purple eyes came for her. Yukito wasn't fond of them, could even say she hated them, but she hardly wanted them dead. Matatabi said that people were hunting the Jinchuriki, hunting Kurama and the children he had saved from loneliness, unhappiness, abuse. And Yukito had looked towards Kumo Gakure, had hesitated even with that fearsome chakra seething behind her, and turned away. Because there was a chance, if she went to Kurama, that he could save her. There was a chance that she could save him, or at the very least, help him. Yukito isn't fooling herself when she thinks she's a talented kunoichi, after all. She's never had a chance to be anything else.
Finding Kurama was her own decision, the first she's ever really made. And if being a good shinobi will help him, she'll keep doing it. But this time, instead of it being for someone else, it will be for her. Because she wants to. Because she chooses to. She likes that idea. In the same way she liked Kurama's words about family. She doesn't know her family. Not really. She's A's cousin, but it's a distant relation at best. Unacknowledged beyond making her eligible to be a Jinchuriki. Matatabi is more of a mother to her than the woman she's seen pictures of but never met. And the other children here call Kurama Kuramani, like he's their brother. Yukito has seen how A and B are together, and she thinks she might want that too. "Braid it," she says, quiet but firm. "It gets in my way otherwise." Those claw-tipped fingers brush her cheek, gentle despite the danger inherent in their edges. "It's pretty," Kurama says as he gathers the strands up in his hands, like sunlight on sand. Yukito ducks down a little, hiding the flush on her cheeks in Kurama's haori. No one's ever said that about her hair before. No one's ever said that about her before. Maybe it really was the wrong choice, finding Kurama instead of returning to Kumo. Still, Yukito finds that she doesn't regret it at all.